The following program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
She's got the news. She talks with newsmakers. She encourages us to laugh, and she cries with us. Speaking truth to power and questioning authority daily, it's the Nicole Sandler Show.
And it's a Monday. Welcome to a brand new week, such as it is. Busy, busy time. Lot going on in the world. Let me move that out of the way. Just seeing what's in the shot. Yeah, we don't want that in the picture. All right, so I don't even know where to begin. Oh, maybe we begin with this. The former guy had a few words to say about the bitch slap heard around the world. I know I usually mute the sound when he comes on as well, but you got to listen to this because this is just unbelievable.
So I was watching the Radical Left Oscars tonight. How about that? And all of a sudden, I'm watching The Fresh Prince of Bel-Air. Okay, we used to respect The Fresh Prince, but he never became the Fresh King of Bel-Air because he failed like a dog. So they tried to give him a new movie. They said, oh, you're King Richard now, sir. But no, you don't get to just have different kingdoms. Either you're the King of Bel-Air or you're a failed prince. You don't get to just become King Richard. So he's very upset, and he walks on stage, and he walked right up to Dave Chappelle, who made a joke about his wife. And I have total respect for my wife, so I appreciate when a man stands up for his wife, because what? I have so much respect for my wife. I won't even tell them when I'm cheating. Yeah. Uh-huh. I let the tabloids do that. Mm-hmm. It's called respect for your wife. Okay. So he got up, and he looked Kevin Hart right in the face and slapped the crap out of him. And I respect that. Kevin but Hart. Then the radical left... Oscars audience, you didn't see any police. They defunded the Oscars police because not a single officer showed up. I wonder why. Mm. And Bill Cosby was left on stage just trying to tell jokes while the failed Prince of Bel-Air was screaming curse words at him.
Yeah,
and the radical left, they applaud. They go, this is diversity. Black on black crime at our Oscars. It's a beautiful thing. Yes, let's watch boring movies and watch the failed Prince of Bel-Air, just run and attack Richard Pryor. And it's a total disgrace. So we wish Eddie Murphy a quick recovery from the attack by Bill Smith.
What?
Okay. And
Bill Smith.
You know, we're never watching the Oscars again. This is why they can't nominate somebody like Kirk Cameron or Scott Baio or Kevin Sorbo, because they wouldn't allow this. They would step in right away. With strong Second Amendment and stop the violence. So good luck, Academy Awards, radical left losers, crime going rampant. Mm-hmm. So sad.
So sad. In case you hadn't figured it out by now, it wasn't actually the former guy. That was J.L. Coven, who, I'm telling you, hit the internet with that, with the video. I didn't play the video because it takes away... Because if you see his face, then you immediately know it's not the former guy because he's got him down pat. So I didn't play, but he posted the video like an hour after that happened last night. So he's quick. He just churns him out. Good stuff. J.L. Coven is his name. C-A-U-V-I-N. yeah, that's why he's so good. Right. You know, I looked over in the chat room and somebody's like, oh, he's still talking. And I'm like, you're not listening. And I guess maybe that's my fault because I told you, you know. And anyway, there's that. That is funnier than what happened last night. Actually, I didn't see it live because I had fallen asleep. However, my movie won. Coda. Yeah. If you haven't seen it yet, you need Apple TV, but it's worth it. You know, you can get it for a month for like $5. Which is, you know, less than the price of a ticket at a movie theater. And then you can cancel it. But you have it for a month so you can watch Ted Lasso, too, you know, for $5. I get nothing out of this, by the way. I just loved Coda. I think it's a great movie. But back to the Oscars, and I wasn't really going to talk about this, and I'm not going to spend much time on it. However, I do have the actual full video. I'm not going to play the video because I'll get copyright violated, but I am going to play the bleeped audio so you can hear exactly what went down, exactly what what Chris Rock said and I'll tell you what, I'm also going to pause it at the moment when he finishes telling the joke so you can see the faces of Will and Will Smith and his wife. What's her name? I don't know. Whatever her name is, Jada Pinkett Smith or something like that. All right, so here's how it started. This goes back. It's about a minute's worth of audio. So here's the setup.
Hottest job tonight, Javier Bardem and his wife are both nominated. Now, if she loses,
you notice how
he can't win.
You notice how he didn't say his wife's name. I would say that what's her name, Penelope Cruz, is a bigger star than Javier Bardem, whatever his name is. Just pointing out some inconsistencies. Okay, but he continues.
He is praying that Will Smith wins.
Okay.
Like, please, Lord. Jada, I love you.
Jada.
G.I. Jane 2, can't wait to see it. All right?
Okay, so they cut to them. And Will Smith is laughing. Jada, here, I'm gonna back it up just a tiny bit so you can see it. I'm gonna go like frame by frame. So there's Jada, and then now all of a sudden the word sunk in and she rolls her eyes, right? But he was laughing. He was definitely laughing. So what happens? In seconds later,
that was a nice one. Okay. I'm out here. Uh-oh.
Now he's stepping up on stage, which, where's security? He goes up, he slaps him, bitch slaps him, goes back down. Now listen to the vitriol in his voice for people who were saying that this was contrived, they did it because it's, to generate buzz for the Oscars. Listen to Will Smith's voice, the two statements he says, which were bleeped out. You know, here in the U.S. Listen to this.
Keep my wife's name out your fucking mouth.
Wow, dude.
Yes.
It was a G.I. Jane jump.
Keep my wife's name out your fucking mouth.
I'm going to, okay?
Wow. And silence.
Like, well, I could,
about a buzzkill. Wow.
That was a... greatest night in the history of television. Okay.
Or not. So, you know what? Whatever these people do, that's their business. Here's the thing. Two things. One, to Chris Rock, don't comment on women's appearances. Nobody asked you. I could play the song. I just need you to shut the fuck up because nobody asked you, bitch. Shut the fuck up. Don't comment on my hair. I get myself dressed up, maybe for my husband, but mostly for myself. If I feel like, it's not for you to comment on. Just like the men who do the catcalls and women walking down the street. Stop it. It's disgusting and it makes you look like an ass. So Chris Rock, don't comment on women's appearances. Just don't. Next up, my second point, Will Smith. What's your fucking gig? You think Jada Pinkett Smith or whatever her name is needs you to be manly and protect her? She can fight her own battles. She's a big girl. It's not like somebody came up and physically attacked her. I think he did more damage, more harm than good in making an ass of himself, not only on a national stage, but a global stage. The Oscars, for some reason, are watched worldwide. So really, Will Smith, you're that insecure? You know, there was a thing that I would have thought they would have gotten angrier about, which was in the opening, you know, there were the three hosts, Wanda Sykes, Amy Schumer, and Regina Hall, who I don't know. And she was the only one who wasn't really funny. And she did a joke about the fact that Will Smith and Jada apparently have an open marriage. And so she was joking about the fact that she was single and she wanted a man. And she was calling out all the single men and then said, maybe he can come. Or, you know, it's all stupid. It's just all stupid. And why he thought he had to get up there and protect his wife's honor. Give me a break, David.
Okay. I have to respectfully disagree.
Yeah.
Okay.
Some guy made a quip about my hair and you got up there and bitch slapped him,
you'd be
in trouble.
No, that isn't what I was going to comment about.
Yeah.
What I was going to comment about was what you said about women dressing for themselves.
Yeah.
Absolutely wrong. And particularly last night, those women were dressing to be seen.
Did you see Venus Williams?
Did you see Tracy?
Serena Williams?
Did you see Tracy Ellis Ross?
No, but the
only thing that was covered on Tracy Ellis Ross were her nipples.
Well, same thing with Serena Williams. She was the opening shot, and the thing was cut so like this, and there were like silver, like round things that covered her nipples. It was like, oh my God, why bother wearing a dress? But regardless, even if women do dress for men to look at them, we don't need you to comment on our looks. Like the people who, the right wingers, when they attack me on Twitter, you know what they come after me on? Oh, you're fat, ugly, and old. Well, you know what? Nobody asked you, bitch. Shut the fuck up.
But that's a different story. You're not at an event where every woman there is wearing something that screams, oh, look at me, number one, number two. And you know boobs have magic powers.
No, you say boobs have magic
boobs
powers.
They're boobs.
There's nothing, boobs. There's no big deal.
Boobs
I see them every day. They're breasts.
Boobs.
They're used to feed babies.
Boobs have magic powers.
Yeah. Okay.
And you cannot put them, number one, on a shelf and then expect, number two, no one to look at them.
Okay, but he didn't comment on her boobs. He commented on her shaved head. And
apparently,
among those circles who pay attention to this kind of shit, it's been common knowledge that she has this disease, the same thing that Ayanna Pressley has that caused her to lose her hair. So it's a touchy point. And to call her out like that, it's just wrong. Chris Rock, it's none of your fucking business. I just need you to shut the fuck up, bitch.
I'm not even commenting on that. I'm just commenting on how every woman there was wearing something that said, look at me.
Yeah.
And using their body get looked at.
Not so every woman. Some of them.
Billie Eilish
doesn't do that.
Oh, bullshit.
Billie Eilish?
She doesn't use her boobs, but what she was wearing was screaming, look at me, look at this fucking garbage.
But she wasn't exposing her body.
No, but what she was wearing was, it looked like someone put a hefty bag on her.
Okay, well, that's her.
But that
her,
was to, that was to garner.
To cover up her body so men don't feel compelled to comment on
it. It was to garner attention. I rest my case, ladies and gentlemen of the jury.
Don't feel compelled to comment on it. Okay. So what do I say about the COVID testing act where the woman patted down three men on stage? I found that totally tasteless. I didn't see it. I didn't watch the whole thing. I went to sleep because I don't sleep well. So of course I fell asleep not long into, probably around 10:30. And I woke up as it was ending. I woke up in time to see Coda win for Best Picture. And then David came in. He's like, oh boy, did you miss this and this and this? It's like, all right. So I saw the clips today. Yeah. Anyway, as I was saying, men, keep your thoughts to yourself. And I know you're going to have thoughts, especially when women dress provocatively. But again, this wasn't about the dressing. I could say something about the cleavage. Like, and I show cleavage because I've got good cleavage. But I don't want you to comment on it. Capiche? Okay. Now, the other thing that, I knew was going to be a problem this weekend, and I don't necessarily disagree with him, but God damn it, Joe Biden is known as a gaffe machine for a reason, right? Do you remember this one?
Ladies and gentlemen, the President of the United States of America, Barack Obama.
Okay, did you hear it? That's where he said, this is a big fucking deal, and it got picked up on a mic. Granted, it was drowned out by the applause as he whispered it to then-President Obama on the passage of the Affordable Care Act, but this is a big fucking deal. Then there was, well, I'm not going to play this whole thing. I have the clip, but it's 2.5 minutes. When he jumped the gun on saying that he approves, he is fine with same-sex marriage. Joe Biden sometimes lets his emotions, his thoughts get the best of him. So he gave this big major speech in Poland on Saturday, and This is how he ended it. Whoops. I think. Oh, here we go.
And together, it was an unmistakable, undeniable force of the people that the Soviet Union could not withstand. And we're seeing it once again today.
Yeah.
With the brave Ukrainian people showing that their power of many is greater than the will of any one dictator.
Dictator. Capital Dick. Okay, and now.
So in this hour, let the words of Pope John Paul burn as brightly today. Never, ever give up hope. Never doubt. Never tire. Never become discouraged. Be not afraid.
Okay.
A dictator bent on rebuilding an empire will never erase a people's love for liberty.
True.
Brutality will never grind down their will to be free. Ukraine will never be a victory for Russia. For free people refused to live in a world of hopelessness and darkness.
Okay.
We will have a different future, a brighter future, rooted in democracy and principle, hope and light, of decency and dignity, of freedom
I
and
hope.
Possibilities. For God's sake, this man cannot remain in power. God
okay.
bless you all, and may God defend our freedom, and may God protect our troops.
Okay.
Thank you for your patience.
Of course. I was perked up. I was listening. I thought this was a strong speech. In a few places, a little too gung-ho war, but, you know, that's just me. He was widely touted for, you know, some people said this could be his Mr. Gorbachev tear down that wall moment. But the minute I heard this line...
For God's sake, this man cannot remain power.
I thought, I wonder if that was in the prepared text. That was the first thing that crossed my mind. And sure enough, it wasn't. It was an ad lib. And I get, he was feeling it. He was there. He's feeling it. And that's what came out. And he even said today, you know, he had a press conference today. And, well, he was talking about his budget, but he was asked questions at the end. He said, this was not talking, calling for regime change. Whatever. Joe Biden should know better than to ad lib because he sticks his foot in it too often. I'm not saying it wasn't called for. You know how I feel about the matter. Just it wasn't the smartest thing for him to do because then they had to walk it back. And now they're saying, no, they didn't walk it back. That's sounding awful lot, you know, Republican-like. Now, as to Nevitz in the chat room, I saw your comment. Let me back up to it. God, you guys have been busy. Okay. Nevitz Forever says, Joe Biden, a gaffe machine? Please. What about Drumpf? Drumpf spewed one gaffe after another every day and put our nation in perilous danger. Did I ever say he didn't? My criticisms of Joe Biden have nothing to do with the former guy. Totally separate, mutually exclusive. The former guy is a fucking moron who was a danger not only to this country, but to the planet. I was petrified every single day he was in office. When I criticize Joe Biden, it's because I expect him to do better. I need him to do, we need him to do better. It's got nothing to do with Drumpf, as you call him, or Dump, as I call him. He's a non-entity. He's the former failed, twice impeached piece of shit that used to occupy the White House. Got it? Please don't ever, ever put those two together again. One has nothing to do with the other. Hi, who's this?
This is PJ.
Hi, PJ. You're in Maryland?
Yes.
Okay. Hi, PJ. What's up?
I have a comment
okay.
about all this hubbub about what Biden said about regime change.
Yeah.
Exactly what is Putin doing in Ukraine?
Oh, it's horrible.
If
Putin
it's not
is
not regime change. What? I've not heard one pundit mention anything about what Putin is doing.
Oh, really? I mean, you've not heard one pundit. Hold on a second. You've heard nobody talk about what Putin is doing? He's bombing,
no,
he's murdering innocent. Fuck you. You know what? Stop it. You can't make a pronouncement like that and expect me just to shut up. I've been screaming about what Putin is doing for the last month. Don't you dare say, I've heard nobody say anything about what Putin is doing. That's nonsense. You care to revise?
Can I get a word in edgewise?
If you stop.
I know they're talking about the Ukraine war, and I agree. He's a brute.
Yeah?
But they've not said that his is regime change. All Biden is doing is saying it figuratively. Putin is saying is doing it literally.
Who's arguing against what you're saying? Nobody.
No. Why are they making such a big deal about Biden talking about regime change?
You know what? Because Biden always puts his foot in his mouth. He needs to stick to the script because he's known to be a gaffe machine. He's done it a million times over the years.
Yes.
It was always
a
problem when he was vice president. He should have stuck to the script. He was doing great. And then he had to create controversy where it was this is an unforced error.
Oh, that's fine. It's okay.
Okay.
I understand. He was off the cuff. He said, in the heat of the moment, he said something. But they're making that more of a big deal.
Who they?
The press. All that's
right.
All you hear today.
Okay. Well, what do you expect? What do you expect? What do you expect?
I would have said what Biden said was taken literally. What Putin is doing is... I'm sorry. What Putin is doing is literal. What Biden is doing is figurative. He's not asking to invade Russia to depose Putin. But Putin is the villain, Biden said.
I agree with you. We have no argument there. But when you come on and say nobody's talking about Putin's doing regime change, it's all I've been talking about.
No. I'm just talking about the comparatively speaking. They're making a big deal of what Biden said. They're taking
it. Well, it's a big deal. When the president of the United States speaks, especially on foreign soil, he's got to choose his words very carefully. And he didn't. He didn't.
When I heard it, I said, yep, he did make a mistake. We shouldn't be calling for regime change.
Then why are we arguing?
But the Kremlin says, oh, what a terrible thing that Biden said. In the meanwhile, Putin is invading Ukraine. That's the only point I'm trying to make.
And it's all I've talked about for the last month.
I understand. I've been listening to you religiously. I listen to you every day. And I'm not talking about what you say about the Ukrainian war. I agree. It's a terrible thing.
Yep.
All I'm saying is that they latched on to one thing Biden said in a whole speech. They latched on to one thing.
Oh, and all the more reason for him to be so careful about what he says on the global stage.
That. Well, but he can't take it back.
No, he can't take it back. So his explanation.
It's unfortunate that he said that.
Yep.
But nothing that Biden does compares at all to what Putin does.
I agree. No, nobody.
Okay.
You're right. We've got no argument there. All right, PJ. Well, thank you for the call.
Okay.
All right. Thank you. Bye. Okay. Well, gee, that got me all crazy for no reason. When you say everyone saying, no, everyone isn't saying. And by the way, here's how Joe Biden explained his remark. Like this.
Kelly O'Donnell, NBC.
Oh, boy.
Thank you, Mr. President. Do you believe what you said? Thank you, sir.
Do you believe what you said? No, I don't.
That Putin can't remain in power? Or do you now regret saying that because your government has been trying to walk that back? Did your words complicate matters?
Your government has been trying to walk that back?
Number one, I'm not walking anything back. The fact of the matter is, I was expressing the more outrage I felt toward the way Putin is dealing and the actions of this man, just brutality, half the children in Ukraine. I just come from being with those families. But I want to make it clear, I wasn't then, nor am I now, articulating a policy change. I was expressing the moral outrage that I feel, and I make no apologies for it.
Good for him.
Personal.
But he shouldn't have said it in the first place.
Secondly, you asked me about, what was the second part?
Complicate the diplomacy of this moment.
No, I don't think it does. You know, the fact is that we're in a situation where what complicates the situation of the moment is the escalatory efforts of Putin to continue and engage in carnage, the kind of behavior that that makes the whole world say, my God, what is this man doing? That's what complicates things a great deal. And but I don't think it complicates it at all.
Mr. President, let me go to Steve Hall.
Okay. Well, there's one more. Let's go.
Thank you. When you say that you're not walking anything back, you do feel that Vladimir Putin should be removed from power? Is that what you're saying?
Does he not listen?
I was expressing just what I said. I was expressing the moral outrage I felt toward this man. I wasn't articulating a policy change. And I think that, you know, he continues on this course that he's on. He is going to become a pariah worldwide, and who knows what he becomes at home in terms of support.
Okay, so there's his answer. You know, look, he should know better than to ad-lib, is my point. There are some things he's very good at, and frankly, I'm glad Joe Biden is president right now because he is showing restraint, and you know, my instinct is to go in and bomb the fuck out of the Kremlin. Take Putin out. Stop the killing because it's just horrific. You know what? I was going to play something else for you here, but we have Harvey J.K. coming up in a couple of minutes. And I haven't given you an update recently on Tanya. So let me explain why. We're still talking. However, the last message I got from her, It's really sad. So when I last told you about her, Tanya, for those who don't know, if you're new to the show, owns with her husband a hostel in the center of Kyiv. It's called Friends Forever. I met her when I called over there because, you know, I call places around the world to talk to people, human beings. And we became friends as she and her husband evacuated Kyiv. They went to a small village to hide out. The village started getting bombed. They moved to a city. Her friend with her husband and son joined them, and the two men finally convinced the women to take the little boy and get out and go to Poland, and they did. And they were there for a couple of days, and the Polish people were wonderful. But Tanya's sister lives in Dubai, and she sent them 3 plane tickets and said, come here. So they did. And so the last I spoke to you, Tanya arrived in Dubai. Well, she's incredibly depressed. So I left her alone all weekend. Here's what she wrote to me on Friday. She said, it's hard for me now, so I don't want to explain. I don't understand my condition. I don't write much because I'm just as empty of good things. I understand that one must live day by day and look for the good in the moment, but my body feels differently. I'm learning to live again. And I would just write her messages of encouragement, just saying, no pressure. I don't want anything from you. I'm here for you. If you need a friendly voice, just so you know that the whole world is watching what's going on and we care. And so today, actually this morning, after I didn't talk to her all weekend, I wrote to her. I said, good morning from Florida. I hope you were able to rest and relax a bit over the weekend. Though I know the news from Ukraine was distressing. I'm still here sending love and hope for peace, but I backed off as I don't want you to feel pressure from my messages. I'm here to lend support and make sure you know that the whole world is watching. And she responded. She said, hello, Nicole. I try to live every minute, but the news changes my condition constantly. My husband is going to return to Kyiv on March 31st, so I don't know when and from what I will feel better. And I responded and I said, I understand. It was basically a message of responding and just saying, you know, I continue to send love and positive, peaceful thoughts. And she wrote about 2 hours ago, and she said, I don't want to upset you. I understand that you need information and you care about how I feel now, but I'm not going through the best time. When I got to a country where people go to restaurants, shopping, parties, and in my country, grief, mourning, and pain are everywhere. I feel ashamed that I'm safe. I'm always smiling and positive, but now if I smile later, I feel embarrassed. How can I smile if this happens in Kyiv? And this is how my everyday goes. I can't imagine where my soul can be at rest now. This is what's going on over there. My heart breaks for this woman. And, you know, I'm trying to lend some moral support and show that she's got friends, but she's worried about her husband, who could be killed any minute now. And in the midst of her getting information about friends who have been killed and homes that have been destroyed, and there she is in Dubai, as she said, with people going to parties and you know, living life as if everything is fine, and it isn't. And, you know, she had written to me earlier about she's been with her husband for 10 years. They've never been apart for more than 15 days. And now she has escaped to Dubai, and her husband can't leave Ukraine. I don't know if he would if he could, but this is what people are living through right now. And the whole world goes nuts because a comedian called a two-bit actor, or said something about an actor, an actress's hair. It's, you know, perspective, people. Look at what's really important. And to PJ, I'm not one who ignores what Vladimir Putin is doing. It weighs on me every fucking day, and I hate it. Okay. So, actually, that wasn't how I was going to go into this next segment, but what I was going to do is talk about the fact that today President Biden released his budget. And, you know, I'm surprised that the media is making such a big deal out of it. And the reason I'm surprised is because they never talk about the president's budget. The president's budget is not expected to pass. It never passes. In fact, Barack Obama's budget back in, what year was it? In 2016? Went down in the Senate 99-0. He didn't even get a single Democratic vote. So the thing is, the president's budget is never meant, never meant seriously in the respect that it's never meant to be the final budget. It's a wish list. It's an aspirational budget. It's not reality. And again, it's usually ignored. So, you know, again, let's put everything in perspective. But that was the way I was going to go into introducing our old friend, Harvey J.K. Oh, hold on. I got to get Harvey's intro. I almost forgot. And we can't forget that. Where is he? Where is he? Oh, shoot. And, you know, Harvey, I just fixed things on this computer. I got a new internet provider, and all the wiring has changed, and the inputs to this computer seem to be not working correctly. And I'm afraid if I can play, oops, I can't bring it up there. I can play your intro. Give me a second. I'm going to play it because
you can't find that. Play Jackson Browne running on it.
I can't do that because I'll get copyright violated. But here. Okay, so I'm going to play this. You're not going to hear it, but everyone else will.
Where is Harvey?
Oh, you mean Harvey J.K.
Yeah, Harvey.
Well, he's coming up right now on the Nicole Sandler Show.
Okay, so you probably didn't hear it because of a thing called Mix Minus, where you can't hear your own things coming through the same pot on the board. But everybody else heard it. So now we know Harvey's here. Harvey J.K., Professor Emeritus of Democracy and Justice Studies at the University of Wisconsin, Green Bay, who has a new piece out where is it at? Common Dreams?
Common Dreams, right.
And it's called, you tell us, because I have it all the way down here. The 21st Century Economic Bill of Rights?
Right. A call for all progressive candidates and office holders to embrace a 21st century economic bill of rights.
Yeah,
which I produced in tandem with Alan Minsky, who is the head executive director of Progressive Democrats of America. So, it may sound, what's the word? It may sound kind of up in the air to talk about an economic bill of rights in the midst of the crisis we're in. But this is exactly the moment where we seriously need progressives most imperatively to embrace and to advance a call for an economic bill of rights. I mean, think about this for a start, before I even explain what that economic bill of rights is, okay, which goes back to FDR. For a start, we know, or at least we sorely believe, that in November, the Democrats are going to take a shellacking.
Okay. Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
But, and we should come to grips with the fact that they're going to take a shellacking, not because the Republicans look good or attractive in any way whatsoever.
Not at all. They've got nothing to offer. But the Democrats are not delivering on what they promised.
Right. And I just, you know, just before we came on, I was thinking, okay, so Biden apparently is down in the polls again.
Again.
You know, that's what I heard today. But right. But is it true?
And on the economy, which is surprising, because bear with me here. The GDP is way up. It's breaking records. Unemployment is way down, breaking records. This has been a recovery. I mean, the stock market is still on fire. Not that that means anything to me. But by all accounts, by all traditional accounts, the economy is doing very well. But he still won't get credit for it. And it's because the media constantly shits all over him. They don't. They don't. Yeah. They don't.
I'm sorry, I don't actually agree with you fully on that.
All right.
Okay. Let me put it this way. Whoever's in power, the other party says that the president really doesn't have any, if the economy is doing well, then the president really doesn't make that much of a difference in the economy. Now, and that's not, look, the American economy is fundamentally strong in the corporate sense of the word.
Mm-hmm.
It is not fundamentally strong in the sense of working people's lives.
And I can attest to that. I struggle every day. You know, I mentioned on Friday that I was maybe going to go see the Indigo Girls. We didn't go. You know why? Because it's $100 for a night out. And I can't afford that right now. So we didn't go. But so I know on paper, the economy is doing well. They still haven't addressed the fundamental issues facing people who live paycheck to paycheck.
Well, they not only haven't done that, but think about it this way. Biden has not fulfilled the fundamental promise to young people of executing, and I'll use that word instead of saying signing an executive order. Right. Let's say executing student debt.
Right. Could have been done like that, right? Could have been done with the sign of a pen.
Yeah, that's first. Second of all, we can blame Manchin and Sinema and all of the Democratic senators who are hiding behind their skirts.
Right.
Okay.
Yes.
We can blame them. But the fact is, what does it say that this party is unable to discipline and get those votes? What does it say about his leadership that they were unable? And by the way, and let's assume for the moment that we're asking for a miracle.
Yes,
but that wasn't the point. They told us last year, get me the two senators from Georgia
and we can do
these things.
Yep.
And the fact is that he should have known. If he knew, then he was lying. And if he didn't know, then that's another sign of his inadequate leadership. Hold on. Okay.
Okay.
But the third thing, and this is the thing I've come back to you with all of the time, and this is the thing that I really do take from FDR. And I know that FDR had a much different congressional situation. But it is the case that Biden has no excuse not to take this note from FDR. FDR knew how to fight and how to get his cabinet to go out and rally Americans to demand action. Now, here's my point. Let's suppose that there was no way he could get voting rights and Build Back Better enacted in the form that we need.
Right.
It's one thing not to be able to do it. It's another thing to leave Americans hanging, to give them no sense, A, that you're fighting, and B, that you want to inspire the fight in them. That was Obama's problem. That's why he got smacked as he did in 2010, not him, why we all got smacked in 2010 by the Republicans when they took not only innumerable seats in Congress and took the Congress back from the Democrats for the first time in a long time, but also state houses. Like, I understand it was 700 state legislative seats changed hands that year.
Yeah.
I mean, that was a devastating, devastating defeat. So right now, this past year, I said it a year ago. The American Rescue Plan was great.
Mm-hmm.
It was the first step to what should have been four steps of a Biden administration. From first you go to the question of relief, then you go on to the question, in whatever order, recovery, reconstruction, and reform. And at no point, and I'm serious about this, this is not a joke anymore, we're facing terrible situation right now.
Yeah.
Biden at no time revealed any stamina and fortitude and aggressiveness on those questions. He just didn't do it. When he said in his speeches, put it on my desk, well, screw putting it on the desk. You get out there with your cabinet and you rally Americans. Let the folks like Manchin and others know that they are screwed.
Yeah, but the thing is, Biden does not have the personality or the following, frankly, to command those kind of events, to get out there and rally the people. Bernie Sanders could have pulled in the crowds. Absolutely. To make the noise. Joe Biden just doesn't have that.
Then what he should have done is he should have
gotten Bernie to go on the road with him.
Come
absolutely.
With me, right. Come with
absolutely.
Me on the road.
And you know what? Bernie would have done it.
Right. So now I'll come back to why the Economic Bill of Rights at a time that seems so impossible. Let me also point out that it's quite likely that in spite of the impending doom, and maybe I'm wrong, let's imagine Americans wake up one morning and say, oh, no way. Or now that I'm with you, no fucking way am I going to allow a Republican to win in my district. Let's suppose that happens. But let's think about this. Whether that happens specifically or not, it is quite likely that the size of the squad, and I'm putting, you know, mm-hmm. air quotes on it,
yeah.
is going to actually increase.
Let's hope.
It is quite likely that the Progressive Caucus, I don't mean the Progressive Caucus overall, because look,
right,
I'll be honest, the Progressive Caucus is not as progressive as it sounds. A lot of them are just hanging out.
Yeah.
Okay.
There are a lot of people who joined because it sounds good. You know, they can say, I'm a member of the Progressive Caucus. And they're not.
Right, exactly. Because they're white and maybe they couldn't join the Black Caucus. Who knows? Uh-huh. So here's the point. Okay, here's the point. The point is that if the squad is going to grow, if the real true progressives will have an increased number, then it means the possibility of actually pushing the Democratic Party, even if it's not terribly far, to some extent to the left. So here's why I think this is important. If we can get not only the current progressives, especially true progressives, and the candidates and quite a few, at least I'm not involved in that stuff at all specifically, but PDA, Progressive Democrats mm-hmm. of America, has asked candidates whom they're willing to endorse to sign off that they support the Economic Bill of Rights. And people are doing that. And I'm talking to people in legislators in New Hampshire, in Massachusetts, mm-hmm. here in Wisconsin, this just a week ago today.
Well, yeah.
A week ago today, a host of Democrats led by two young freshman assemblywomen, Francesca Hong and Christina Shelton, one of whom is my representative in Madison, they reintroduced their legislation for a Wisconsin Economic Justice Bill of Rights. The turnout, it was in a news conference on the assembly floor because they're not in session right now.
Right.
There was a host of Democratic legislators from around the state. Major movement leaders were there. I was there as well. And similarly, Mark Pocan from here in Wisconsin, okay? And mm-hmm. Mark Pocan's no radical. Let's be clear.
No, not at
that,
all. He's a center.
Right, but he has been co-chair of the Progressive
right,
Caucus.
Right, but he's one of those that's not quite squad-worthy. Okay. But he has a run-of-the-mill center progressive.
Yeah, right. So the energy was quite interesting. It was a great press turnout. It hit the media here in Wisconsin. I don't know to what extent it got out of the state. But there is a certain traction to this idea because it is imperative that the Democrats not continue to be a party without a story. Mm-hmm. They just have no story. You know, I said this to Mark Pocan, and I can tell you the rest of the story another time, but I said to Mark Pocan, you got to understand, Mark, if you and I walked out on the street and they didn't know you or I here in Madison or any other city here in Wisconsin, and I said to people, hey, what do you think of when you think of the Democratic Party? They're likely going to answer, even if they vote Democratic,
yeah.
with the talking points of Republicans.
Yeah, I'm hearing that a lot, unfortunately.
Right. Yeah, exactly. And that's why in states like Florida and even here in Wisconsin, the Republicans hold on to their to their seats in the legislature because they don't believe, most people, that the Democrats offer anything that will change the way things are. And the proof of that is that when push comes to shove, they don't fight for it, and they have no vision or story to offer. So I said, so think about it. If the Democratic Party, pushed by progressives, actually was to take on this idea of an economic justice or economic bill of rights, and we can go over them quickly if you'd
like. Yes, oh, absolutely, you know, I want to.
Then it might well be that people would start to say, well, they're the folks who want to enhance American democracy. They want to actually enhance our rights. No, we're not going to take the crap of the corporations that workers can't have unions. We're not going to take the arguments of Republicans that that in fact taxing the rich is a bad idea, et cetera. So let me give you here. I'll read through this list.
Okay, but hold on. Before we get to that, let me just say what you're saying is right. The Democrats, what we saw in Virginia last year, the governor's race, all Terry McAuliffe what it ran on was, oh, I'm not Trump. He is like Trump. We're not Trump. But he didn't show them what we're going to do for you. And the other part is he couldn't show any progress that since the presidential election, look what we've done for you from the promises we made.
Right.
This 21st century economic bill of rights, these are things that if we could get the party to sign on to and say, this is what we stand for. Remember, the Republican Party stands for nothing. They have no platform. The only thing is that Donald Trump is their leader. Therefore, don't say gay, which death sentence signed into law here in Florida today. Therefore, killing your right to an abortion, to a woman to control your body. They're to banning books. They're to suing teachers. What they're for is horrendous. And yet people are going, but the Democrats have promised all this shit and they don't give us anything. So this 21st century economic bill of rights is a really good starting point, and it's nothing outlandish. It's nothing
exactly.
Unreachable.
This is, you know, I rarely talk. I know that's going to sound terrible for me to admit. I rarely talk to people about morality.
Mm-hmm.
I rarely talk to them about spirituality. I talk to them about political economy and justice kinds of things.
Right.
Okay. But when I talk to people about this, just before I get into it, the fascinating thing is people say, well, that just seems the right thing to do, the moral thing to do.
Duh. Right? Well, that's what a Bill of Rights is. Think about the Bill of Rights, right? These should be givens. These should be givens. Like, just that's your norm right there.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, in this country, they're not.
I'm going to introduce this with one sentence.
Okay.
Well, two sentences from Franklin Roosevelt back in 1944.
Okay.
When he offered the first call for a serious economic bill of rights, he said, we have come to a clear realization of the fact that true individual freedom cannot exist without economic security and independence. Necessitous men, meaning needy men, are not free men. And today we would say needy men and women are not free men and women. We have accepted, so to speak, he said, a second bill of rights under which a new basis of security and prosperity can be established for all, regardless of station, race, or creed. That was in 1944. Okay. So starting from that idea that, look, and the fact and the test of that is when I read this to people, they say, well, that just seems reasonable.
Yes.
So we have come to believe that this should be the right of every American.
That's right.
Here we go.
Hold on.
First,
here we go.
The right to a useful job that pays a living wage.
A living wage. What a concept.
A living wage, which FDR himself called for in 1933.
Wow.
Two, the right to a voice in the workplace through a union and collective bargaining, which was made the law in 1935.
Right.
Three, the right to comprehensive quality health care, which FDR wanted to do in 1935, which Americans have always wanted to see happen.
Hello.
And yet, and in 1965, we at least secured Medicare and Medicaid. Now, for how many years? What is that, like almost 60 years ago, right? And we have yet to go beyond that. And constantly, we have been under, it's been under siege from neoliberals and conservatives.
Yep.
Fourth, the right to a complete cost-free public education, meaning that if you can make it through university and on to graduate school, law school, medical school, whatever, if it's a public education, we should cover it, not simply for your sake, but also for the sake of all the rest of us. Mm-hmm. And moreover, access to broadband internet, because too many folks have been left out.
Yep, okay. And we saw it during the pandemic, too. Kids who had to sit outside of a McDonald's, you know, phone trying to do their homework.
Right. I often think of this as a rural thing, but it's equally an urban thing in all too many households.
Yes, okay? It is. Yep.
Fifth, the right to decent, safe, affordable housing.
Can I tell you something?
Goodness.
Rents have exploded. People are leaving Florida because rents have gotten so expensive, and it's not just here. It's all over the country.
And moreover, mortgages are going up because the
interest rates
federal,
are going up.
In its infinite wisdom, the Federal Reserve has decided to let interest rates go up. Okay?
Well, the thing is, I mean, they were at zero for so long. It's just so low you can go, and eventually they've got to bring them up, especially when there's inflation.
They were low, and working Americans were even lower.
That's right. Yeah. Exactly.
Right. Six, the right to a clean environment and a healthy planet. Now, does that make sense or does that make sense?
That makes sense. We haven't done anything to further that, by the way.
Right. No, I don't even think people realize that although in the 60s, clean air, clean water, and a clean earth were becoming the law of the land.
And
ever since then, Republicans and too many neoliberal Democrats have gone along with them, have allowed those laws to be whittled away, down, and the Environmental Protection Agency has been allowed to stand back and watch this unfold.
You're right.
Okay.
Number seven.
The right to a meaningful endowment of resources at birth and a secure retirement. Now, the secure retirement, we understand, that is a good social security plan.
Right.
We know that.
Yep.
The endowment of resources at birth, that goes back to Thomas Paine in his pamphlet, Agrarian Justice, when he first called for what we came to know of as Social Security. He was the godfather of Social Security. But he also said, you have to fight poverty to begin with. So young people should be given a certain kind of monetary grant to enable them to get an education, to buy land, or to go into business, whatever it might be. Fight poverty to begin with, and not only when people are compelled to stop working, that kind of thing. Okay. Eight. This may sound unusual for a right, but think about it. The right to sound banking and financial services.
Right.
In other words, now what that means, look, there
freedom
are
freedom from the for-profit banks like Bank of America and Wells Fargo and Chase.
And moreover, there are banking deserts where communities that don't have banking facilities.
Wow. And which is why so many people, progressives, have been pushing for post office banking,
exactly,
which is a no-brainer. But instead, they want to starve the post office and kill it to turn everything over to UPS and FedEx.
I remember being amazed when I went over to England to do my graduate work in 1971. I was amazed that there was postal banking. Mm. You could go into like a drugstore with a post office in the back and buy stamps or post a package and make a deposit or a withdrawal from your bank account.
Yep.
Okay. Number nine.
Number nine.
Right to an equitable and economically fair justice system. Okay.
We're nowhere near that now. Just, you know, witness the Supreme Court.
Yes. Oh, God. I want to vomit when I think about the stuff that they tried to. Whoops, my chair just went down. I was so upset. Number 10, the right to recreation. Now, at the least vacation, moreover recreation, and participation in civic and democratic life. Let me start off with the lowest level participation in democratic life, which is also the most fundamental.
Protest?
Voting. Wouldn't it be nice for a start if instead of working all day and trying to rush to vote or getting up at some, well, you can't even get up early to vote because the voting places don't often open until you have to go to work.
Yep.
How about a day off, a national holiday to vote? That's like the minor thing. That's a big thing.
How about the political parties work on ways to make voting more accessible to everybody rather than trying to keep everybody people of a certain ilk who might be more prone to vote Democratic from voting?
Absolutely. And by the way, that particular participation in civic and democratic life was not there in FDR's original call because he had it in a separate initiative. This was pretty much at the heart of Eleanor Roosevelt's idea of four equalities in 1938, 39, wow. 40, when she was giving speeches, not surprisingly, to predominantly black audience, urging them not to give up, and in the North to make sure they voted, that kind of thing. Okay.
Yep.
Now, I just want to say, because I get a kick out of this. So there's a, I don't know if you know Jen Perelman. I don't know what your relationship
is. I know her. Yeah. She ran against Debbie Wasserman Schultz in the last cycle. I don't know if anybody's running against Debbie this time. Jen's a nice person.
Yeah. I mean, I've never met her. But like you, I came to know her not as often, but I came to know her, you know, through shows and stuff. And when I mentioned this to her and to her sidekick, Peter, they first thought this, they started laughing. They said, oh, you mean a right to recreational marijuana? And I said, well, it's to your own choice. But the point is, if we go back to the 1930s, there was a commission, Resources Board.
Okay.
It was a New Deal commission that FDR had created to come up with a vision beyond the New Deal. What do we do to get out of the Depression? And as the New Deal succeeds, what do we do beyond that? Keeping in mind, they didn't want to go to war originally. And this commission produced a report. I could remind me another time. I'll show people. It's like this big, thick thing. Coffee table size, but paperback. And in this report, it laid out an initial set of proposals for an economic bill of rights that was to literally help guide FDR in his speeches. And by the way, the overwhelming majority of Americans wanted these kinds of rights.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they didn't call it a right to recreation. They called, dig this, the right to adventure.
Ooh, I like
they
that.
They wanted people to be in a position, I think they actually had in mind, to be in a position to go out. It's going to sound cliche, touristy, and discover America. That's what I think they had in mind.
Well,
and when I've told this to people, in fact, I've become friendly with Nina Turner. And when she heard about this, we've talked at length and done an event together. She loved the idea of the right to adventure. So I said, well, maybe there ought to be something in the budget. So you know how those groups organized to get veterans of World War II and Korea to be able to fly to D.C. to see the monuments?
No,
it was called opera. Anyhow, they took 747 loads of veterans to see the World War II and Korean War monuments before that generation passed away. So I said, how about in favor of their grandkids and great grandkids, we create a national fund to enable every school kid in America to go to Washington, D.C.
Wow.
How's that? You know, the right to adventure.
Yeah. I'm sorry. That's the least of what we need. We need a lot more stuff.
No, I'm just using that. I see we're running towards the end.
Yes,
we are. Just throw out some cute ideas.
Right. No, I mean, we have some cute is nice. We're not in a position for cute right now. We need drastic measures to help people.
Here's my problem. My problem is that when I get together with you, I get uplifted.
Okay.
You got it.
I got no comeback for that. Maybe I'll slap you across the face.
Tell David what I said, okay?
Okay. But this makes sense. I will publish, I will link to the article in Common
Thank
Dreams
you.
On the blog where I post the show. It'll be at NicoleSandler.com/3-28-22. And I'll also post these, the 21st Century Economic Bill of Rights. Things to make people's lives better, easier.
Right.
And, you know, that's the thing that gets me. I get it. You're pissed off. You're pissed off. The Democrats aren't fulfilling their promises. They're not coming. But the alternative, this is why I always say, I do vote for the lesser of two evils. Because frankly, I don't like either political party. They both suck. Right? If I could reform it, I would. But I can't. So we have to go to the polls with the political system we have, to quote a war criminal. So,
right.
Or to misquote a war criminal. So, but look at what the Republicans are offering us.
Yes.
Bigotry, hatred.
Racism. And sexism. You name the ism of the darkest form and they'll offer it to you.
Yep. In fact, I got to tell you, we're going to leave the Progressive Voices Network leaves us in about 10 seconds. When they're done, we're going to go into overtime for just a minute because I got to tell you a story, what happened today. But Progressive Voices Network, thank you for listening. We'll see you tomorrow. Will Bunch of the Philadelphia Inquirer will be here. Thank you for listening. Bye. Okay, so I think Progressive Voices is gone now. So let me tell you what happened here.
Do we still have an audience of any sort?
Oh, big time. Yeah, we just lost Progressive Voices. We still have...
I just want to know what I shouldn't say.
Oh, we still have everybody else. We still have, yes, I mean, most people.
Hello, everybody.
We got the video streams, we got my audio streams, we got the podcast, we got, yeah. So, no, we just lost the live Progressive Voices feed. Okay, so last week, I get notified that a credit card that I have was compromised. Somebody tried to use it to charge on this website. It's called SoRare.com, which happens to be like a fantasy sports league or something, right? Oh. And so on the 14th of March, they tried to make 7 charges, which were all blocked by the company. But on the 15th, they let 5 charges through to the amount of about $165. And so, yeah, come in, David, but let me finish the story first. So, you know, I called them. I'm like, so I got rid of the card. This is through Square, by the way, which is what I use to run my painting business because I now have a little side business doing painting, right? So I'm talking to them. It's like I called the company SoRare, or I emailed them going back and forth. It is a fantasy sports thing. So the money, the purchases that this guy tried to make were all for shits for the website, not for merchandise that would be sent to his house or anything. So I figured he's got to have an account there. Contact them. They won't help me at all. So today I filed a police report with the local Coral Springs police. And today someone, a cop called me back to get more. He's like, I just got your case. I've got some more questions for you. And he starts in with, you know, there's a lot of immigrants coming here and they're all looking for social security numbers. So you need to, the first time he said it, I bit my tongue and I let it go.
He said
it again and he said it again. And I said, excuse me, sir, I need to just stop you there and ask you to please stop demeaning all immigrants. My grandparents were immigrants. And he's like, oh, mine were too. I said, then why do you do this? He said, because they're coming across the southern border and they need social security numbers. So they're still, I'm like, stop it, sir. This is highly inappropriate. Please stop with the Republican talking points. And he started to argue with me and then he backed off. And he's like, I'm sorry. And then he moved on. This is a fucking cop. This is what's out there. This is because they watch Fox, not news, and they're being force-fed these lies, and people echo it back to you, and that's what the average person is thinking, and that's what's so dangerous. Now, I called this cop out. David was surprised because he hears me on the phone because his office is right in the next room, and I was cordial. I was courteous, but I'm like, you cannot do that. This is not okay, and he was surprised that I didn't like tell him to go fuck himself, but it's a cop who I needed. He's helping me on my case.
Yeah.
I can't believe it. I can believe it, but I can't believe it.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that's what's going on. And that's why the Democrats, one reason among many, why the Democrats are in such big trouble right now, because the media is a giant echo chamber and it's echoing propaganda.
Oh, and God. Yes. Yeah.
That's the problem. People are, and people watch Fox. It's the most watched cable, not news network, who bills itself as news.
Yeah.
Yes. David, my husband wants to chime in here.
Hi, Harvey.
Hi, David.
So you apparently forgot something, and that is any minute now, the Republicans are going to have an epiphany because they're going to want to work with Joe Biden. Don't you remember he told us that?
Please.
Any minute, like I'm telling you, it could be just like right now while we're on with Nicole, the Republicans could all have an epiphany and they're going to get behind Joe Biden and Cory Booker and sing Kumbaya. Any second now, the man is fucking delusional. He refuses to acknowledge the fact that the Republicans hate his fucking guts and will do nothing to help him.
Yeah. And you know, David, I know you're expressing that from deep in your heart and soul and all that.
Without a doubt.
I fear that if the Democrats lose control of either house, which is not unlikely,
no,
they are that a year from 3 months ago, Biden's going to extend an abrazo to those guys and say, I know we can work together.
Oh, he won't have a chance. The first day that they're sworn in, they're going to introduce articles of impeachment.
Oh, of course they will. Of course.
Day one.
No doubt.
Day one. It will happen.
And they throw Adam Schiff off the Intelligence Committee and they do all kinds of shit like that. It's going to get, you think it's bad now.
Yeah,
Before the new class is sworn in.
I mean, right.
Before they take their hands off the Bible, somebody's going to be in the hall, in the well of the Congress, introducing articles of impeachment.
Which you see, and I cannot believe that the Democratic leadership is not conscious of that fact, and yet continues because their asses are so covered by their own wealth that they do nothing about it.
Without a doubt. Hey, one quick question for you also. Hey, I subscribe to this site off of Prime, Amazon Prime. It's called The Great Courses. Are you familiar with it?
If I've got the right one, I am familiar. Yeah,
you should be on there because
I've never dealt with them.
I've heard lectures from at least four professors, I believe, from University of Wisconsin Green Bay.
Wow,
that doesn't surprise me either. And I would imagine they were psychologists and political scientists. Just a guess.
No, actually, there was one. God, I can't remember his name. He's a dark-haired guy, Hispanic last name, and he does history. And he's very good.
Really? At GB? At my own university?
At University of Wisconsin, Green Bay.
I don't know. Maybe it's UW-Milwaukee.
No, it was listen, Harvey, I'm telling you. As soon as I heard it, I went, that's Harvey's people. Where's Harvey?
Yeah, where's Harvey? Right, David. It's good to talk to you, but I got to get going.
Okay? Same here. Take care, Harvey.
All right, thank you, Harvey.
Nicole, it's great to see you. Thank you for uplifting me.
Always. You know that's my goal. Every time we talk, that's what I want to do.
Okay, right. Have a good week, however bad it gets.
Yeah, you too. Thank you, okay, Harvey. Bye-bye. We'll talk soon. Bye. All right, and with that, we're done. Harvey J.K. You know, I'm looking, you know, when I have a live guest on, I can't really follow the chat. I understand our pal Nevitz really disagrees with me. And Nevitz, I think we need to talk. I think you need to call into the show tomorrow in the first half hour. I will make sure I have open time. I don't have your phone number, but you have mine. 954-889-6410. Nevitz, I want you to call into the show tomorrow. You know, 5 minutes in, let me start and then call and we'll talk. Because Nevitz seems to believe that if I'm critical of Joe Biden, that's going to make you not vote for him. I wish I had such power. You know, you give me way too much credit. I don't have that kind of power. Frankly, I don't know anyone who does, except maybe, you know, on the other side where people are lemmings and they're in a cult. We're not in a cult. And I encourage everyone, don't listen. I want you to believe what I say because I take great pains to only tell you the truth. But even I make a mistake every once in a while. So check what I say. Do your own research. Read everything. Make up your own mind. And see, and that's the problem is that we all do that. And on the other side, they follow their marching orders. They're good little North Korean soldiers. March in lockstep. Read the same talking points every day and sing the same songs. We don't do that. And it may be our downfall. I don't know. All right. So anyway, tomorrow I hope Nevitz calls in because I would like to have that discussion. I'm not a cheerleader. I never was. I never would be. And I think it's my responsibility as someone who cares, who wants the Democratic Party to succeed, to call them out when they fuck up. And they're fucking up all too often. I'd love nothing more than to just sing his praises. And I certainly tried at the beginning of this administration. But when I see something that's wrong, something that mistakes are being made, I'm going to call them out. It's not done out of malice. It's done because I want them to do better. It's constructive criticism. It's done with love. It's done because we need them to do better. Not, I don't just want them to do better. We need them to do better. We need them to fulfill the promises that they made to get 80 million people to come out and vote for Joe Biden. Yes, many of us voted for him because it was a vote against Donald Trump. But that's not enough to propel us to keep them from taking over. And if they take over, we are totally fucked. And I promise you, not in a good way. Watch The Handmaid's Tale. That's where they want to take us. And I'm afraid that's where they will if they get back in power. And we'll never get another shot at it because they're going to fix all the voting systems. They already are. They're putting partisan Republicans, partisan Trumpers into election supervisor positions in counties around the country so they can do what he tried to do in 2020. It's our job not to let them. It's a big challenge. But I can't lie to you and say, oh, the Democrats are great. You better believe me. Or that's going to make people not vote for the Democrats, not me criticizing them. So anyway, Nevitz, I hope you call me tomorrow so we can have this conversation. If not, I'll just keep saying what I say. I hope you can understand it. All right. I'll leave you with the news. Tomorrow, as I said, Will Bunch will be here. He's got a lot to say. You should read his column at the Philadelphia Inquirer, inquirer.com. All right. With that, it's time for the news. And I'll see you tomorrow. Thanks for listening, everyone. Bye.
It's time for Nicole Sandler's What's News from NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
Come on, man.
President Joe Biden is no stranger to gaffes. So on Saturday, when he wrapped up his major speech in Poland on Putin's war on Ukraine, many listening wondered if this was in the prepared text.
For God's sake, this man cannot remain power.
No, it wasn't. It was an ad-lib, and the White House immediately began damage control, insisting that he meant that Putin should not be in a position to exert power over the region any longer. Julianne Smith, the U.S. ambassador to NATO, on Sunday reiterated the White House's downplaying of the declaration that Putin cannot remain in power, emphasizing that the U.S. does not have a policy of aiming for regime change in Moscow. She said Biden's ad-libbed comment was a, quote, principled human reaction after meeting with Ukrainian refugees and hearing, quote, their heroic stories as they were fleeing Ukraine in the wake of Russia's brutal war in Ukraine. But a new round of peace talks between the two nations is just beginning, and Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky says he will accept a neutral, non-nuclear status for his country in order to reach an agreement. But he said that any decision would be put to a vote among his people and that the country's sovereignty is not in question. Meanwhile, Russian missile strikes continued to pummel Ukraine over the weekend, including more strikes around the city of Mariupol, which Russia wants to capture because of its strategic port. But the head of Ukraine's military intelligence said that Russia's assault on the capital city of Kyiv has failed. And instead of capturing the government, Russian President Vladimir Putin could now be aiming to break Ukraine in two, like North and South Korea. This just gets worse and worse. Here at home, the House committee investigating the January 6th attack on the Capitol released a report on Sunday making the case for filing criminal contempt of Congress charges against former White House trade advisor Peter Navarro and former Deputy Chief of Staff Dan Scavino for failing to comply with its subpoenas. The panel is expected to vote Monday on recommending that the full House refer the matter to the Justice Department. But remember, those same charges were filed against Mark Meadows at the beginning of January, and nothing more has happened. Merrick Garland, paging Merrick Garland. As the new week begins, the Senate Judiciary Committee also begins the process of moving Judge Ketanji Brown Jackson's nomination to the Supreme Court to the floor. Under the committee's rules, the Judiciary Committee Republicans have the ability to delay the consideration of Jackson until next Monday, and so they are. So the committee vote is scheduled for next Monday, April 4th. In the meantime, Jackson continues her one-on-one meeting with senators all week. Her nomination is looking strong. It appears no Democrats are opposed, But the days of justices being confirmed with 90 to 99% of the Senate voting for confirmation appears to be over. In other Supreme Court news, Senator Amy Klobuchar said that Justice Clarence Thomas should be recused from any cases related to the 2020 election, arguing that his wife, Ginny Thomas, texting White House Chief of Staff Mark Meadows about overturning the election is a, quote, textbook case for removing him. You have the wife of a Supreme Court justice advocating for an insurrection, advocating for overturning a legal election to the sitting president's chief of staff, end quote. On the COVID front, the FDA is expected this week to authorize a second booster of both the Pfizer and Moderna coronavirus vaccines for people aged 50 and older. This decision comes as the U.S. braces for another rise in COVID cases, this time from a fast-spreading Omicron subvariant that has fueled a surge in Europe. Once the announcement comes, the CDC will likely make a, quote, permissive recommendation, which means that the additional shots won't be officially recommended, but will be available to those who want them. And some of us have already gotten them, including my husband and me. We got them Friday and are feeling more protected already. It's budget time again. President Biden releases his yearly budget proposal Monday. The big item on it is a tax on the richest 700 Americans for the first time, a 20% minimum rate on all households worth more than $100 million. There's still a lot of details that aren't known about this, but it's unlikely to pass. In fact, know that the president's budget rarely receives any congressional support or notice. In fact, for example, President Obama's 2016 budget was voted down in the Senate 99-0. So don't expect too much from this one. And finally, the Oscars were, well, different this year. Some record-making wins. The Apple TV Plus film, Coda, won Best Picture, becoming the first movie released by a streaming service to win Oscar's biggest prize. Coda's Troy Kotsur became the first deaf performer to win an Academy Award in the Best Supporting Actor category. Ariana DeBose won Best Supporting Actress for her role as Anita in West Side Story, becoming the first openly queer woman of color to win an acting Oscar. But the moment everyone's talking about is when Will Smith jumped up on stage to slap Chris Rock across the face for making fun of his wife Jada Pinkett Smith's bald head. Pinkett Smith suffers from a hair loss disease called alopecia. His rambling, teary acceptance speech delivered after Will Smith won the Best Actor Award for King Richard. Yeah, that happened. And finally, rest in peace, Taylor Hawkins. The Foo Fighters drummer died over the weekend. He was found in his hotel room, unresponsive, before a scheduled show in Bogota, Colombia. And that's just a bit of what's news for now. I'm Nicole Sandler. If you appreciate these reports and the Nicole Sandler Show, I hope you'll consider making a contribution. My work is 100% listener supported, and I can't do it without your help. Find out more at NicoleSandler.com, and please click on that donate button.